you have to reconvince everybody that you can do basically anything after a brain injury. So it's a lot of reestablishing your identity, reestablishing your independence. And as a young man, you know, I was 26 when I was hit by the car. I already had established my independence becoming a young adult, and now I had to do it all over again.
It's easy to talk about the successes, but what doesn't get talked about enough is the struggle. My name is Eric Weinmayer. I've gotten the chance to ascend Mount Everest, to climb the tallest mountain in every continent, to kayak the Grand Canyon, and I happen to be blind. It's been a struggle to live what I call a no-barriers life, to define it, to push the parameters of what it means. And part of the equation is diving into the learning process, this process of growth and change and transformation that we're all a part of, and trying to illuminate the universal elements that exist along the way, like holds on a rock face that lead us forward and give us clues to why it's so important we get there. In that unexplored terrain, between those dark places we find ourselves in and the summit, exists a map. That map, that way forward, is what we call no barriers.
Today we meet Thomas Dixon. In his mid-20s, Thomas was hit by a car and suffered a traumatic brain injury which caused seizures and severe losses in his episodic memory, a type of amnesia. He does not recall anything about his day's activities. Thomas created the innovative mobile app Memory to provide the missing information. It's similar to an external hard drive which he feeds with all the details of his day. He can later put these pieces together. Instead of having his brain store all kinds of information, his app can do it for him. Thomas is finalizing his memoir titled I'm Sorry, That's Awesome, which covers his injury, recovery, and his journey in inventing memory. You can check out his website for his app and any updates at www.yourdigitalmemory.com.
Hey, this is Eric Weinmayer, and this is our No Barriers podcast, and I'm hosting with my friend Jeff Evans. I'm one of the co-founders of No Barriers, and Jeff is one of the co-founders of our Warriors program, so we have an amazing person today to speak to. He's part of our No Barriers community, and to kick things off, how you doing, Jeff?
I'm good, and you know, just doing a little research on Tom, our guest here. It got me thinking just how technology these days is really created and supposed to be a conduit to making life a little bit easier and smoother and all these things, because that's part of what Tom does. And we're going to learn that throughout this interview with him. But I mean, Eric, you and I swap war notes all the time about being on the road and how just challenging it is to juggle everything, to juggle family and work, yeah, and just being fit and staying on top of our game and then giving time for ourselves as well. And it's just so hard to manage all of that. And so reading a little bit about Tom's bio got me thinking about how tough it must be to be able to kind of walk in his shoes. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Tom.
It's so hard. I mean, as I've been preparing for this interview, same thing. I've been thinking like I'm on the road. I was just on the road for 11 days. I was in like 5 cities, you know, and I have a whole team that helps me organize my schedule and get me on the right planes and, you know, get to the right events. And then I have a 45-minute window for a workout and then I'm sprinting to some other thing. And it's like, and then you meet so many people, right, throughout the day. And for me, I don't remember half the people I meet. I don't remember their names because I don't have like a face to remember. Mm-hmm. So it's just got me really thinking about this discussion today. So with that, why don't you introduce Tom?
Yeah, so Tom Dixon is a Philly guy. And seeing as the Super Bowl just passed off air, we were talking about the excitement after the Super Bowl and the Eagles beat the the dynasty. And I think the majority of the country was thrilled about that. So, Tom's been living in it the past week in Philly for post Super Bowl. So, being a Philly guy, the way I understand it, he was at his parents' house and was out for a run and, running on those streets of Philly, and then was involved in a motor vehicle accident and was hit. And because of that injury, he suffered a pretty significant memory loss. And it's not just, you know, a memory loss per se, but it's a loss in episodic memory. So it's a type of amnesia. And I'm going to let him sort of fill in the color. But the point is that he has a hard time sort of organically recalling things that happened just, you know, 2 days ago, even if it's simple as, you know, eating a meal. So, you know, this is a guy who has his master's in education, who was living his life and had the same sort of faculties as the rest of us. And then all of a sudden was, you know, sort of hit with this event. So, Tom's with us today, and Tom, we're excited to have you.
Nice to talk to you, Tom.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
So Tom, tell us about what your life was like, you know, pre-injury, you know, before that day.
Right. So you're before that day. I actually want to share one of the things you mentioned, that I went for my master's of education. That was not my life at all before I was hit by the car. I was studying to be, I was in pre-med for University of Pennsylvania, and I was working at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in psychiatry research. And I wanted to become a psychiatrist for children, you know, and that was my old life, as I like to call it now. And then on November 22nd, 2010, I'd been visiting my parents because my mom's parents had passed away. So I kind of just was there for them. And I must have taken a break for myself going on a run, because I've run half marathons before. And then I was hit. And I tell people, it's a day I'll never remember, a date I'll never forget, because I always tell people that was the day I was hit by the car. But I have no recollection of that day.
And do you feel like that was chronologically sort of a significant, like basically time stopped and started on that day for you when you reflect back on your whole life?
Well, there is a distinction, you know, you make, I call it old life, new life, because there's just a very different feel to it, and a different set of priorities, a different way of interacting with the world. When I had my old life, when I was neurotypical, you know, when I had neurotypical memory, and then now with my severe episodic memory loss, I've had to adjust and change everything. And I'm really glad that it's been working, you know?
I mean, it's an understatement to say that it must have been a shock, right? When you woke up, right? I mean, what was that process like in the beginning?
Well, this is one of the things I found, that my memory loss was more severe towards the beginning after the injury, and it's become less so. So there's a recovery period. I believe it's like 6 months to 2 years. And then after that, your recovery pretty much has tapered off. You're not going to get any better, essentially. In the very beginning, I had a notepad next to the hospital bed, and it read, you were hit by a car, you're in recovery right now. Your parents will visit you at, say, 5 o'clock. And I was told all sorts of things, like that I ate multiple meals, and people thought maybe I forgot that I ate. I must have been very hungry in the beginning. So it was just, I don't really have memories of those initial days after the accident.
I can't imagine that process. I mean, in some ways, all of us are like forgetting lots of things that happened in our lives in the past. You know, like I can't remember half the things that happened to me day to day, like 20 years ago, you know, but for you, it's just a very intense version of that, right? Or how would you compare it to, you know, as you said, the prototypical brain kind of works?
Yeah. Well, Eric, I'm going to actually say I don't even think you could remember half of what happened 20 years ago, because if I ask you a date, can you tell me what you ate for breakfast, lunch, and dinner that day? Or the people you
had involved
that day, then no. Like, we all forget the overwhelming majority of our lives. So when we talk about neurotypical memory, we're still talking about severely forgetting the overwhelming majority of our lives, like 99.9% of the things that happen to us, because they don't matter. You know what I mean? You don't need to remember right. 5 years ago that you forgot where your shoes were for 5 minutes and then you found them. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, it's really great that we can forget, actually. It's very efficient. So I tell people we all have severe memory loss. My own is just much more severe, you know, and that's why my solution using memory for my memory has really helped me. And I'm thinking it could help a lot of other people, too.
Yeah, no, I want to hear more about memory, because that seems pretty fascinating about how you used something that's in our hands every day to be able to create something. But I just want to ask you sort of a two-pronged question, and it's the black and the white of this event that happened to you. Can you tell us the very best thing that has come from this event and the very worst thing that has come from this event for you personally? As you continue to walk through your life?
I would say the blessing would be what a degree of relatability you can now take on after you've suffered from something, after you've been knocked off your horse, and other people will tell you about their own pain, their own suffering. And although it won't be the same as your own, it'll be different. But you can relate to having fallen, relate to having suffered and struggled for some time.
I think that empathy, Tom, is really interesting. We've heard other guests talk about, you know, that loss that you experience, you know, that hole gets filled up with other things like empathy, like love, like sort of just connection with other people who have suffered. So I think that's a really fascinating thought, and I can personally relate to that.
Yes, I believe that you absolutely can, given what I'm aware of for your story, you know, your experiences.
What's the frustrating part? What's the hard part?
Sure. The frustrating part, I'm glad to say it's become less so, because one of the great things about us is how we can adapt, you know, people overall. But initially it was, with a brain injury, and I note this in the book I want to publish, you have to reconvince everybody that you can do basically anything after a brain injury, that you can make yourself a can of soup, you know? Like, no one knows quite what to make of you and how much independence to afford you, how risky it is. You know, I had to convince people that I could take public transportation again on my own. I had to go through courses, you know, I went through community college classes to see if I could make it through that. So it's a lot of reestablishing your identity, reestablishing your independence. And as a young man, you know, I was 26 when I was hit by the car. I already had established my independence becoming a young adult, and now I had to do it all over again.
That's incredibly hard to do. Do you think that having a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury, do you think that, I mean, how do you, like, for instance, I'm blind, right? So people can see I'm blind, you know, and they have kind of a, most people have a kind of connection. Like, they go, okay, the guy can't see, I'll be helpful. But for you, your disability is invisible. Do you think, I mean, I often think that may be harder in certain ways. What do you think?
Yes, and it can be maybe a blessing and a curse, you know. And there are groups that talk about this, the Invisible Disabilities Association, for example, that, yeah, you get to pass as quote-unquote non-disabled, quote-unquote, you know, typical. And you feel almost like you're carrying around a secret, you know, because nobody knows about your severe memory loss in this case. And at other times they might think that how you act is unjustified because you don't look like you have a disability. An example I like to share is how the disability bathrooms tend to be the most easy to find, tend to be the most easy to get back to your seat from because of their location. And if someone were to see me walk into that bathroom, they would say, "What do you think you're doing?" without realizing that maybe I would have a harder time finding the other bathroom and then finding my seat back because I don't remember where I was sitting just then.
Right. Huh. Well, that kind of is a good transition into tools, because a lot of your life, right, is like developing and embracing these new ideas and tools to be able to move forward. So like, I'm fascinated, like, how that all began. You know, you're clearly an innovative person. Like, how did you get through school after this brain injury? What were the kind of things that you found that got you through?
Sure, absolutely. I'm really glad. I tell people I had this injury at the right time, so to speak, because we carry around computers in our pockets now in the form of phones. Like, you don't have to stand out. And you can email yourself to do things, for example, if it's non-time sensitive. If it's time sensitive, you can make calendar notes. There are so many workarounds now with modern technology. For classes, I had a LiveScribe pen and I was recording. I had permission to record the lectures, and that really helped. Also, it really helped that graduate school, a lot of your assignments are done on your own time. There are papers, you know, there are presentations that you give, but you're not really spontaneously required to recall information. You know, it's not an exam that you may need to know when you learn something. That's something I should share too. It's more like I can learn things, I can make new memories about something. Like, for example, Eric meeting you, right, this experience. A lot of it is the when. When was something, when did it happen? You know, that can be a huge issue for me. And that could matter in other courses. But in educational psychology, it didn't really matter.
So are you saying, that's really fascinating. So are you saying that you can like learn something and you just know something, but you're not exactly sure how you learned it?
Or it's more like, I like to give people examples like, you know how to do something, you don't have to relearn it every time. You know, you learned it once and eventually right, you just know it. Like, you know how to use a microwave and you don't need to be taught how to use a microwave when you see a new microwave. You know, already right, know how to do it. So that's one example. And a lot of things, we know them, but we don't know when we learn them. You know, we all know the word dictionary, but if I ask you what day did you learn the word dictionary, you probably don't know that, and right, it doesn't matter, you know?
And that's probably a sign, right, Jeff? Like, Jeff, you know, is a physician assistant, so he knows a lot about science, but like, it's probably because, you know, your brain is so plastic, right? There's like things happening in different parts of your brain, right? So certain learnings and memory, like memory is in one place and learning, you know what I mean? It's all connected.
Yeah, there is a lot of overlap, and you know, you may learn something for one purpose, but then find out that the skill applies in a different way than you could have imagined at that time.
Right.
Tom, I'm just reflecting on how this incident, and which led to your, I don't want to call it a disability, but the, you know, your memory specific loss, how it's affected your relationships with your immediate family. And then I guess the next question would be your girlfriend that we heard from a little bit ago. Was she on the scene after or before the incident? And then how does it affect, you know, your relationship with her?
She is part of my post-injury life. We met a few years ago now. So we've only been dating after my injury. The things that I see, I've injury is because partly it's an invisible disability. As Eric was sharing, people don't have to ask him, is he blind? You know, or he doesn't have to be so open in saying, I am blind. But I do, partly because with memory, people get offended if you don't remember them. You know, they think that they didn't matter to you enough that you would remember them, right? So when I make it clear to people that it's not a choice for me to remember them or not, because I don't even know what happened yesterday, maybe, then it's also okay that I can forget them. And that's one of the reasons why it's important to be open about it too.
And then do you find that to be challenging sometimes simply because it is this hidden disability? It's not like you walk around with a sign like, hey, I have a brain injury. And even though I met you 2 days ago, don't be offended that, you know, I don't remember your name. How do you get that out there to the network of people that you engage with every day? And let them know, like, hey, this is something that I deal with every day.
Well, I'm really glad that I turned my disability situation into perhaps entrepreneurship and opportunity related to memery, because I, you know, went from people perhaps feeling very sad for me being unable to remember, but then telling them how I wanted to create this technology that is a type of memory. And so it changes the conversation. And that's why the memoir I want to publish, I'm calling it I'm Sorry, That's Awesome, because of that very reason. I'm very outgoing about it, and it changes the discussion. People don't feel sad, and instead people celebrate with me how life has turned around for me.
In fact, one of the tabs that you've got on memory is you can attach an emotion to that particular event, right?
Yes, we've seen that people are using that.
So give us just a real quick rundown on what the format's like, because here I am, I'm having, you know, a sort of normal recollection of times, events, people, and so forth day to day. You know, as I age, I realize my memory's not as good as it used to be, but I think we all experience that. But what I see here from memory is an opportunity to document, describe, and create a sort of chronology, a bit of a biography throughout your day to day. Is that right? Or what else would you add to describe this?
Well, I talk to people about it as being a digital memory. I talk about it as being a fully searchable artificial memory. So I'm updating, you know, my day. What, you know, did I was just at the grocery store, had lunch with my friend, and I'm adding in as much or as little detail as I want to. And then later on, when I wonder, hey, when did I last see that friend? I type in their name, and then it searches all of my memory, all of my entries from the very beginning until today. And every single mention of that person is pulled up for me. And that's one of the ways I'm using it. Just for fun, I searched for Eric just now. And I see that I first mentioned him February 7th, 2017.
Awesome. What'd you say in there?
yeah. I wrote here, and this, it actually grabs the location too. So this was at 1901 Vine Street here in Philadelphia. I'm so impressed and stunned by this talk from Eric Weinmayer, the only blind person to have ever summited Mount Everest. Perhaps I should work with No Barriers USA, the nonprofit which he co-founded in 2004, such could be how I will advocate those with severe memory loss and or TBIs.
That's cool. Well, thank you.
And then boom, you went on to win the Reach Award at last year's summit in Tahoe, right?
Yeah, and came out to the summit.
Oh, yeah. What a great experience the summit was. And of course, I didn't expect that to happen by going to Eric's talk and by introducing myself to Eric. I thought, as a person with a disability to another person with a disability, and overcoming circumstances, that many people must talk to Eric about such, and that we would relate on that level, and also just how much I had enjoyed coming to his talk.
And so when you write a note like that, Tom, does it spark a memory like in your brain? Do you remember that meeting? Because it's funny, sometimes with me, like somebody would be like, yeah, you met that person two months ago. And even the, you know, somebody telling me I met that person, I still can't remember meeting them. Or does it, so which way does it work for you, or maybe both?
I'll say both. And I'll also admit something that when you get into psychology, when you have a memory, like, are you actually remembering it as it was at that moment? Or are you recreating your memory in the act of remembering it? So if you've developed a friendship with somebody, you know, later on, but they were at a party earlier in your life, you might think you had a warmer relationship with them during that time at the party, but they might not have been as close to you then, and you might remember it differently because of your more recent experience, you know?
That is, all right, I have to digress here. Sorry, Jeff, but there's a guy that I met a couple years ago. And he called me up and he's like, hey, I want to reconnect. We were such good friends in college. I can't remember this guy in college. I was so embarrassed. I just pretended like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, we were buddies back then. All those great parties. And I couldn't remember a thing about this guy. And now we're really good friends. And I can't remember a thing about him from college.
It turns out maybe you never knew him and he just was like trying to get in your inner circle and it worked.
I guess so.
That's cute.
I tell people that my memory is as good as I make it, you know, because it is. It's based on what I record. It's based on what I choose to enter. And I still live in this moment, obviously, but I might need the past. And so I might need to search for information just to have it at the time. So, yeah, I'm, you know, obviously it's a different situation.
But I think it's fascinating a little bit what you just touched on, the idea that, you know, you kind of are forced to live more in the moment because you can't rely on the past quite as much as a lot of people. So you just are able to call up the past when you need to, when it matters. But that's a really interesting thought, you know, that it kind of forces you to live in the forward.
Yeah, that's the power of now, the Eckhart Tolle, right? Like you are the living testimony to living at this very moment instead of sort of living in the past, you know, and allowing that to be the fabric of you, you know?
Hmm. Right, but at the same time, who are we but our past moments, you know? So it is pretty important for me to have that information
right
on command. You know, we might think we like to be carefree at any given moment. And if we don't, you know, we also need a sense of direction, a sense of purpose for ourselves. And I'm just glad modern technology can help me live a full enough life, you know, help me earn my master's and help me resume my trips internationally, even though I don't know things from yesterday.
Hey, so tell us more about Memory and how people can use it. How many people are using it today? That's a really cool part about your story because, I mean, you created this innovation, right? And it has potential to help a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it can help many people such as myself with episodic, you know, more severe episodic memory loss. As I say, we all have episodic memory loss. We don't know what happened every day of our lives. My own is just more severe. So it could definitely help people like that. And also we're seeing many patients, people with Alzheimer's. We know chemotherapy causes memory loss. So yeah, there's a huge segment, a huge population that this could be helping. And yeah, we're just curious to see how many people are picking this up now. We have Memory available internationally. So I get a map of the countries where memories are being saved. And that's interesting to see people are using Memory in Africa, even people that I'm likely never going to meet. And some of the unintended consequences of releasing Memory 2, I may have shared with you before that parents are recording their children's lives rather than their own lives and the lives of, say, elderly and such. So it's interesting that it's being used as a caretaker type of app too, which is not something I imagined before, you know?
Oh, that is really interesting. So you could almost use it beyond like us. Just any person could use it to record important things that we're going to forget, even as quote unquote normal memory people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like to tell people that it's as good as you make it, essentially, because
right,
you're generating the data, you're generating the information, and then it's retrievable through the app, but you're the one who's putting it in, and it's convenient. You know, it's talk to text, you can type as well. I used Twitter as my memory before inventing Memory. I used Twitter privately, and I was able to import my Twitter feed into Memory, so I didn't start from zero, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, do you basically have a set point of memories that until, you know, from that point where you started on your private Twitter feed, is anything prior to that recognizable for you? Are you able to retrieve anything from that, like from your childhood, as you were growing up and so forth, or is that gone?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. The type of memory loss that I have is prospective episodic memory loss. So retrospective would be before the injury.
Okay, right.
So prospective is things after the injury. You know,
okay.
Basically my disability, the ability to recall life after my injury. So all the things that had happened before my accident, yes, I was aware of who I am, where I went to high school, you know, what I care about usually. Yes, all those sorts of things. So they are still there. They've been there.
So that stuff's locked. Interesting. Yeah. Tell us about your book. So I'm sorry, that's awesome. I love that title.
Yes, I think it's going to make people curious enough to say, wait, what? And to pick up the book and be curious to say, yeah, I could understand why everybody says to this guy, I'm sorry, that's awesome.
You know, when I read the title, though, that's interesting because it's someone else saying that to you in a way with knowing your history. I almost interpreted it as you saying to them, I'm sorry, I don't remember you us meeting, or I don't remember you telling me that, but that's awesome.
So that's what I interpreted it as. In a way, honestly, I did. I interpreted it the same way.
Yeah, in a way, it's right. On its ear, and it actually could be either person, and it's basically you and the person you're with both acknowledging that either way, like, oh, I didn't, okay, we skipped over that part, but that was still pretty damn awesome. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, I like that that take on it. I will say that. I have to admit, if I was going to say I'm sorry for not remembering, it would be that I'm saying I'm sorry every single day of my life. You know, no right. choice. So when you make it clear to people that you don't have a choice about remembering, they tend not to be upset that you don't remember. It's impossible, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. It'd be like me saying, I'm sorry, I can't see you. Like every
exactly,
second.
Exactly. You said that every single day. Yeah. You couldn't say it every
right.
single day. Yeah.
My voice, I'd lose my voice saying that. So you got to let that go. Right?
Exactly.
So Tom, what other than the book and getting it published and getting it out there and continuing to spread the platform of memery, what else is on your agenda in the foreseeable future?
Well, I'm actually looking at getting back into the workforce. Yeah, I am now meeting with potential employers and seeing if that will help me as well, being able to put more of my money into Memory's continued development, because we have features that we're still looking to refine to get out there a bit more fully. I told you, I believe that it grabs location. I want to be able to search my memory by location, type in an address and see all the entries around that address, see the last time I was in a neighborhood, for example. And we do have a basic version of that where you're able to pull up a map and you're able to see where your entries are. But I want to be able to type in an address, and just the way I would search for, say, a restaurant in that area, I want to be able to search for my memory in that area.
Mm. So you create a sense of space around that memory as well as a time, which is really cool because that's what the brain does too, that sort of remembers when something happened, or maybe even more, probably remembers where it happened, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, in general, you think, you know, if you were out with friends at a restaurant, you tend to remember when it was, who was there, where the restaurant is. You know, it's, of course, many components. And that's one of the things I want for a memory too. It grabs location currently, it automatically stamps the date and time on it. And then because I'm recording who's there with me, it has all of those components together in an entry. And I didn't see anything else that was letting me do that in the same way. You know, I was using Twitter as my memory before inventing Memory. And that's why I went ahead with inventing Memory, because I said, I need more. And also the ability to search all of it on demand, you know, and get information statistics as well, you know?
Well, Tom, best of luck.
Well, next level, this is the next upgrade. Memory 2.0 is going to be biometrics, where you've got emotional quotient. Right. Well, the biometric marker is like, Tom was extraordinarily excited about this encounter that he just had with XYZ. Yeah, I can't wait until you reveal that at the next Snow Barriers Summit.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I got to have more of those experiences then, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've been awesome, Tom. Thanks for sharing some of your day with us. You're a fascinating guy, and you know, your experiences, although very unique, I feel like all of us can, you know, sort of consider what it would be like, or you know, as we try to reflect back on these things in our lives. You know, usually it's big events. Yours is just, you know, is more profound to the point where it's just, you know, 2 days ago, a day ago. And so I think that all of us can distill a lot from your experience and what you share with us today. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, Tom, I'm really impressed because you're really like a real authentic representation of this Snow Barriers life. You know, there's, you know, there's struggle, and you know, there's certain things that you're never going to quote unquote overcome, but you just keep pushing forward in this really honest way, and good things come out of it. And so I'm really proud to know you and have you as part of our community. So thank you.
Wow, Eric, that means a lot coming from your team and you. And I'm glad to be a part of this community. Thank you so much.
Awesome. So Jeff, let's reflect here. You want me to start? Because I mean, gosh, I got a lot out of this discussion.
Yeah. Tell me some of your bullet points from our conversation with Tom.
Well, I'm really excited and interested in this whole idea of, you know, living in the moment. Sure. But Tom made this really good point that, you know, your past is so important to where you're going, you know, right? It defines who you are. It's like when he was talking, I was thinking about like a chain that's, you know, connecting your past with your present, with your future. And when you lose that, how disconcerting that would be. And so, you know, he creates this memory app that, you know, is the ability to create that chain of memory. And that's really cool. Continuing to innovate that. And it's interesting how those innovations we find time and time again come, you know, not out of like happiness and joy. They come out of hardship. They come out of necessity, right? So it's just one of these amazing stories of innovation being born from adversity.
Yeah, the innovation comes from adversity. Well, you know, I consider myself sort of a Eckhart Tolle scholar, right? I love The Power of Now. I think it was a game changer for me. And that whole book just talks about being right here, not yesterday, not tomorrow, but right here in this moment, because it's truly all you have. So I've been a big subscriber to that. Now, today, hearing from Tom, it really makes me reflect on, you know, how critical it is to be able to understand and acknowledge and value all of these pieces, these threads that come together to create this big, large fabric of where we are now. And it comes from the mouth of a guy who has lost the nearsighted version of that. And that makes him value it, and you know, it's more precious to him than it is to anybody, you know. And so that's what I really got. And I think those of us that are parents, you know, as Tom alluded to, like capturing our kids as they grow up, you know, I look at my son as the marker for time. And I, you know, every once in a while you'll go back and open up a photo album and see photos of your kid. And when he was a little baby boy, you know, and then growing up to being a teenager. And I'm so glad I have those moments, but I rely on those photos. Those photos tell me what that history and that memory was. It's not because I can remember that day. That day is gone. So what Tom is doing is helping anyone, but specifically his community that he's touching with this app. It's to be able to reflect on these critical pieces of our history, to be able to add to who we are at this very moment. So fascinating stuff.
I love it. So, well, thank you, everyone. And if you want to learn more about No Barriers, look us up, nobarriersusa.org. There's lots going on, so check it out. We have youth experiences. We have programs for veterans, for all kinds of people within our community. So learn more about us. Jeff, thanks, man.
Thanks, Eric. That was good.
No barriers.
Thanks to all of you for listening to our podcast. We know that you have a lot of choices about how you can spend your time, and so we appreciate you spending it with us. If you enjoy this podcast, we encourage you to subscribe to it, share it, and give us a review. Show notes can be found at nobarrierspodcast.com. Special thanks to the Dan Ryan Band for our intro song, which is called Guidance. The production team behind this podcast includes producers Diedrich Jonk and Pauline Schaefer, sound design, editing, and mixing by Jesse Singer and Tyler Kottman, graphics by Sam Davis, and marketing support by Laura Baldwin and Jamie Donnelly. Thanks to all you amazing people for the great work you do.